there. So it's your family story.
All right, good morning, everybody. I'm called to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, October 16, 2018, and ask if everybody please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you and good morning. First item on our agenda, as always, is public comment number one. It's an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda or really anything you'd like to address. Anybody wishing to do so, come right up to the microphone. And seeing no one moving immediately the microphone, we'll move on to discussion and information regarding Sarah Gordo, and I'm going to say Sarah Gordo and other county requests to join CICS, which is our mental health region that we're so thrilled to be part of. Jody Eaton and Carla Webb, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for traveling, Jody.
You're welcome. It's a nice little drive.
She makes it often.
Not in the winter, but the semi year she makes it drive.
Okay, so we did bring with us the PowerPoint that we shared with the governing board last month, and so we'll walk you through that. So obviously we've received a request. Our governing board did receive a request from Cerro Gordo County to join our region. We did hear from a board member yesterday, and I'll let you, Jody, talk about that.
Okay, well, Jody, before we start, so just to lay the framework, because while you're talking to the regional board, clearly those are people that are well-versed in what's going on. So let's talk for a minute about what the region is, how the region's doing, and the reasons that we're starting to see interest from counties that are part of other regions joining us here in CICS. And so right now we're a region of 11 counties, and it seems to be that in what is a tough system right now, especially when we talk about getting providers paid for services here in the state of Iowa, that CICS is performing at least as well and maybe better when compared to the other regions of the state. So can we start with some foundational elements like that?
Well, we can. I am also the chair of the CEO Collaborative, so I try not to compare. But, you know, if I were to compare, we are doing a good job, as are most of the regions. DHS just recently put out a press release talking about how the regions have grown and the services that they're expanding, and have released their dashboard reports, which they're required to do. In those reports, you would see how the funds are being spent, and then also the access standards and where regions have gone as far as creating additional crisis services and jail diversion services, which was one of our additional charges. Those were services that we could implement after we had the core services in place. We had started doing that. Mobile response is one of those. And the legislation this year, however, has now moved those to core services. So those are now required. So most regions are moving forward with that.
Okay. So without putting you in the position where you have to compare or feel like you need to compare us to other regions, I'll ask you this as our region CEO. Is there an area that you feel like our region is falling short right now, or we're not achieving kind of the benchmark goals that our region set out in order to provide the core and the core plus services? How would you assess how we're doing in this region?
I think we are not where we want to be. No regions are where they want to be. But a lot of that has to do with the MCOs coming in. That was a little bit disruptive to the service. What we had before was dismantled, and we had to create this new, this new climate. The providers have been reluctant to move forward into some of those services that we have, asked them, to help us build. And so, we do find a reluctance on their part. We have to work around that. There are barriers, concerns, but we have found ways to work around those obstacles. And again, mobile response is a great example of that. Getting that implemented into an 11-county region, it is a big deal. We did that by releasing that in tiers in order to work through any of the issues we had to implement it, you know, region-wide. So, there again, we're moving into another expansion when we look at subacute access centers, a brand new type of service called intensive residential service homes, is unknown for Iowa. So as we move into those things, finding providers who are willing to take some risk with us in order to get those things implemented. It's a big task.
Absolutely.
But, like I said, we will figure out how to work around those obstacles, remove those obstacles, and then get those completed.
Super. Thank you. So Marty's our representative, and you're actually vice chair of the regional board. Anything you would add before they get started on the specific conversation we're having today?
No, I would have to say I appreciate the fact, even with Cheryl Gordo contacting us and saying that they would like to their request pulled back, I think you have the opportunity for Story County to hear what the region is doing and allowing the board to weigh in with asking questions. As I go to the meetings and I get the background, I think this is just an opportunity to educate us in the county as long, and I look forward to the conversation we're about to have.
Thank you.
I would like to say one thing that's different about CICS that I do believe does put us kind of at an advantage is that we do not have a vertical structure. We have an administrative team. So the former CTCs, or in Carla's place when she was promoted to that position, we have officers that perform certain functions within CICS. We meet on a monthly basis. I do not get to make all the decisions, and we make recommendations based on what we've discussed to the governing board then at our meetings.
I think that's so important to point out, and I'll point out one other, and I'm not even sure how this compares to other regions, but when we were forming our region initially, there was some conversation of whether we were going to have weighted votes based on population or anything else, and I think one of the real beauties of our region is it's one vote per board member, which is per county, and we truly have come together in most cases as a region rather than as differing counties that happen to be part of a group.
I feel very much that way. And, our decision to pool funds rather quickly has really helped that as well. I think most of the governing board members, while they do represent their own counties, do look at the whole region. You know, how can we, just because we're putting a service here doesn't mean it isn't going to benefit us. I think about the couple of the expansions that we've done with outpatient clinics, one in Warren County and one in Poweshiek County. Putting that provider into Poweshiek County definitely helped Jasper and Marshall. We had people from Poweshiek driving to those areas, and appointments weren't readily available there because they were being used by Poweshiek County. So putting a provider then in Poweshiek County helped those neighboring counties as well. And I think that's one of those things that we've recognized, and what's good for our neighboring counties is also good for us.
Absolutely. Good. Thank you. Okay, now I'm ready.
Now you're ready. Okay. Very good. All right. So I guess, Jody, if you want to just kind of walk through.
Okay. We did receive that request on August 29th, and it was a formal letter of request from Cheryl Gordo to join CICS. So we discussed what our process had been previously. When the region first formed, we had a request from Warren County to join. That was early on in the process, and then later on, Poweshiek County. So we already knew that there were some information that we needed to bring in, and it had to do with financial information, and then also what services do they currently have, what's their, what other things can they bring to the table as far as services, providers, and then what is their cost as well. So we did know from the redesign report from DHS that they do have a little bit of guidance on what they feel would be the population size that a region should be. They always hesitate to give specific information, but they did refer to the original work group when they talked about regionalization, and they had recommended between 200,000 and 700,000 folks. So we know that we already meet that threshold. Cerro Gordo population is 43,070, which would not put us over the number that they had identified, but we also don't need to increase our population based on that. The department also mentioned in that report that a region could become too large geographically and become difficult to manage, but they also did not give specifics on what that geographical limit should be. So based on that information, although DHS provides some guidance, there's not a real clear direction in, you know, what they're saying to regions specifically in this situation. I'm not sure why your projector turns off.
We need a new projector.
Okay.
Thank you.
So you're dealing with different shades of blue.
That's right. We are.
Yes, we are deeply pastel here.
But this is the current map, and the reason we have that up, there are some changes that are already occurring. Woodbury County has chosen to leave their region, the Sioux Rivers region, which then puts Sioux and Plymouth in a two-county region, which isn't allowed. And so those counties, Woodbury has asked to join Rolling Hills, which is supposed to take place this or next July. And then Sioux and Plymouth have asked to join Northwest Iowa Care Connections. In addition to that, there was some legislation specific this year that would allow any of the counties in CSS, which is the light blue up there, to break off and form their own region. It doesn't look like that's going to occur, but a few of those counties have asked to join Northwest Iowa Care Connection. They are still working through that process. They were accepted contingent on them paying their dues to the region that they were leaving. So I have not heard from that CEO where they are in that process. I know they had a meeting to discuss that again last week. Emmett County, which is up there in the corner, did not want to leave CSS, but they really won't have a choice because they're going to be cut off and not contingent. And so DHS will be working with them. They consider them an orphan county. They would be working with them to work out any of the details in order to put them in a region. So when we were looking at that, we realized that Cerro Gordo joining CICS would also cut off four counties. And we received a letter from those four counties asking us to delay that decision. So that was part of our consideration as well. And then, as we mentioned, we did just receive word from Cerro Gordo on Friday asking us not to move forward with that decision. So I'll give you a little bit of the information. Maybe.
Sorry.
Well, one of the things we look at is the tax levy, where they currently are, what that would change if they joined CICS, and then what they're currently levying, and what they would levy if they came into CICS.
And I'm struggling to get it to work. Sorry.
Well, at this time, the CSS maximum per capita levy is $4,365, and CICS's per capita maximum levy is $3,550. So Cerro Gordo would be able to decrease their tax levy. And currently, they were levying at $3,318. Our per capita at this time, in order to spend down our fund balance, which is required by Senate File 504, our per capita levy is $2,220.
All right. Can you help, Jerry? I cannot get it to go.
I'm working with you, Carla. Shocking.
Well, CSS, we also asked the CSS region for additional information, and they gave us a breakdown of what their financial costs for Cerro Gordo had been, and the per capita estimated cost for CSS was $44.60. For Cerro Gordo County alone, it was $65.68. There have been some things that they have decreased this year, so next year's amounts would be less. They had launched an autism center and children's services, and then also kind of revised their residential care facility. So our estimated per capita cost for CICS is $29.76. But I think Jill had a disclaimer there that all costs are not included, or not fine, that we don't have the final numbers on that. I think when we did this, we were not past the accrual stage at that point. Their provider network, they do have an inpatient psychiatric hospital, supported employment, supported community living, co-occurring disorder services, so many of the same services that we have as well. And we did indicate that CIC investments into Cerro Gordo could benefit our northern counties, and then it would also add another population center, which then creates critical mass and sustainable service expansion. And that would benefit both CICS and the neighboring regions. The neighboring regions investing in those also benefits CICS. Looking at the management plan review, there were some similarities, which, you know, is something that we did this with Greene County as well, and felt like most of what they were doing did fit what CICS was doing. And even with that, we learned some things. Even bringing in a county of less than 10,000 people, we definitely learned some things as well. There were some differences. One is, like I mentioned, that the way the CEO is appointed, and then they do more of a vertical organization where we do an administrative team structure. Their eligibility is up to 250% of poverty. I'm sorry, ours is 250% of poverty with a copay over 150%, and CSS's is up to 300. And then our copays, the way we did those, were also somewhat different. And then our assessments that we provide for all individuals seeking funding is a different sort of assessment. When we looked at the staff, we talked about whether our current staff would be able to absorb the additional duties of a county that size. We did indicate that we really felt like there would be a need for additional staff in some of those areas. Cerro Gordo did have more staff than CICS had, so that would be something that would need to be worked out as well. Our service expansion that we would put into a county, or if they joined us, which is what we've done with all of them, is add mobile response. We could just estimate what that cost would be, and you can see that there. A transitional living center, we felt with a population that size, we would need an additional TLC, and then access to crisis services as well, which is somewhat of a grant fund that we provide to our community mental health centers in order to have crisis appointments available and meet the access standards. And then again, crisis line and also our telesite that we provide to all the local emergency rooms. Another consideration is that the CSS 2080 was silent on transfers and fund balances, so we don't really have a good picture about what funds they could be bringing with them. It would shift attention from what we're currently planning. We would need to do another strategic plan in order to bring in a new county, And then there was also a concern we had with the provider rate differences in our contracting processes. There would be a number of providers that would need to come under CICS's with as the host county region, so they would follow our contracting processes, which is different than theirs, and then our rates are different than CSS's. So looking at these options, the governing board did look at the administrative team to come back with a recommendation, so we did discuss that at our last administrative meeting, and our recommendation was 6-1, with one individual being absent, to deny the request.
Good. So our conversation here today, thank you for all the information about the Cerro Gordo application specifically, and I want to underscore again that Cerro Gordo has since asked basically to withdraw that application. But I think it's important, as we have this opportunity on our agenda, to just talk about philosophically where we are as Story County Board of Supervisors in terms of our region. And so I'll be glad to kick it off. And I don't have to be careful about where I think our region fits. I think we are in the best region. I think we are dealing with the issues that we face, and there are very real issues that we face in terms of providing mental health services. We're dealing with it as well as anybody anywhere, and our citizens are reaping the benefit through those things that we're providing. And I don't want to see us do anything that is going to detract from this region that we've built. I thought adding Green was completely appropriate. I thought they needed us, and there wasn't enough mass there to really change who CICS is. When you start talking about counties of 40,000 plus people with a lot of their own centers and providers and everything else, there is mass there that can kind of a cultural potential shift that could absolutely impact our region. And Marty, I'll speak to you as our representative on the region board. I would really be reluctant for us to go down any pathway that would potentially damage this region that I think we worked so hard to build. Loris, I'd love to get how you see it. Mm-hmm. How you see it?
Sure. As someone who sat there through a lot of the formation meetings, and I watched how the individual supervisors and individual staff member worked to create what we had today, and it was impressive. It also seemed to take into account the balance from the smaller populations to us as the main foot in the room, okay? And so I've always, during that early period, there were discussions about Polk being in the middle and then even how you get around those services and the contractors who are coming up from Polk and the logistics there. So I've always kept that in the middle of my mind, you know, fortunately we didn't have to go with Polk, okay? So when I first heard about this, I had some questions about whether we were stretching too far. And then about 3 or 4 weeks ago, with the mental health symposium and everything, Joan Becker came to town to speak about her tragedy with her son. And she's from what, Grundy County, right? Or is it Guthrie? Okay, Grundy. And I asked a question. And I said, have mental health services gotten better since you went to region? And she happens to be in CSS. And her response was, I don't think so, because our region is too big and too spread out. So I now have that in the back of my mind as these emails are coming forward and this discussion is occurring. So my feeling about this is based upon the early days and watching the formation and then the concerns about distance, even expressed by a consumer from CSS, I'm really reluctant to take on another big county. I do understand and that it's helpful to the counties around, even because it helps shore up the providers. But I'm concerned we might do it at the risk of causing big problems for us.
Yep. Conversation that goes around on the executive meetings is, and you see people coming back to the office, my office, before meetings, after meetings, and there's real unease. We did a very very nice vetting process in onboarding Greene County this summer. 9,100 people. They were not feeling that they were being treated as a peer in the organization, the region that they left, and they had heard, and then they had observed us, and they thought, clearly, we are a region that is doing things with an openness and a welcoming environment that we they wanted to be part of us, and they have been made there. I guess I set the metric in my head that we get to a tipping point of land mass as far as delivery of services. Clearly, when you listen to part of the supervisors speak for the fact that they're on a bottom tier and they feel that it gets to be a little bit tough to chase the Minnesota border, that there's really kind of an unease there, and I get that. We get to sit in the middle. We're Switzerland. Everybody gets along with us. We do our best to be the good neighbor. And I think the region has clearly been that from the inception till this moment. I like the fact that, and Jody touched on it, but I can't say it enough, we laterally administer this region, and I think that's our success right there. We have people that are on the taper side of their careers, have done a very fine job in their respective counties. We get to share that knowledge base, that talent level. My greatest fear here, if you want to talk about what I see the region facing here in the near term, the 0 to 3 years, is the fact that we'll be having people step away, and we'll have to replace either through raising leaders up within the region or onboarding people. That, to me, this is one of those conversations that wanted the opportunity to have this being done, a Story County discussion about what the region is doing. But I would tell you from my experience sitting on the region as our representative is Joey Eaton will be leaving us, and she will be taking a tremendous amount of skill sets with her, and that institutional knowledge she will not leave on a desk for somebody else to pick up and use. We have that John Grush is staging himself out by fractions. I don't know what he's down to now, 1/16, but he keeps coming to everything. And we have other people on that same story in that timeline. We are doing a very fine job. We are a deliverer of services. We seek out opportunities next week. We are going to be opening a crisis response center here in Ames. That's huge. You know, and the fact that we've got Mary Greeley to come in and do the heavy lift on the backside on the hiring is just tremendous. We are trying to move into the corners of our region to provide services on a local basis, such that the travel times to meet the appointments and the delivery side is not a burden on the people that need it most. We have a very good organization. I'm loath to bring anybody in or to add anything that would cause other people to start looking elsewhere to leave us, because I think that we take away that you don't add something to lose something, and I think that's we're almost at that critical point where I would frankly would have voted against doing this myself. To onboard Cheryl Gordo. So appreciate what you guys have come in here and said. I appreciate what you do on a day-to-day, how I have seen in 2.5 years of the region being run, and I look forward to better days, and we do a very fine job in this region.
Yeah, so thanks, Marty. So I was the lone member, lone remaining member of the Board of Supervisors that had to go through this process of figuring out where Story County fit. Full disclosure, and these two know it, I was completely opposed to regionalization. I thought Story County was doing the best we could do in the system we were in. I was afraid that regionalization meant that we were going to go to the least common denominator in terms of provision of services rather than lifting everybody else up. And so we looked hard at joining with Polk County, and we looked hard about applying to be a standalone region and with a standalone county as a region. And then we looked at this, well, I think originally was 7 counties talking about getting together, and I think made the correct decision to go with that. And I'm so happy to report that looking back on what my fears were of what would happen, I was wrong. The fact is there has never been a time that more mental health services have been offered to more residents of just Story County than there are now, and that's a huge credit to our region. And Marty, I got to say this: I don't know if I'm opposed to our region adding a county if a county fits, but it better be a county that's joining what we are rather than coming to us and thinking that somehow we're going to adapt to fit them. I don't want our region to adapt to fit somebody else. I want them to adapt to fit us if they want to come join us, because we're doing it the right way, and the proof is in the pudding with the services that we're able. Think about the things that we're able to figure out and get done right now with still questions of funding, right? Joe, you talked early. It's hard to get providers to start new services when they're not positive that they're going to get paid or paid appropriately for those services they're providing, and yet we're still figuring out how to get it done. That's a huge credit to you guys. It's a huge credit to our region. And so I would really be reluctant for us to do anything that might negatively impact this region that a lot of us have worked so hard to build.
I agree.
Okay, that really, because this was just a pro forma item we could easily have pulled down, but I thought we've got it here this close. The conversation would be had. It got wows the people of Story County to hear back where the region is at in the service of these people and where our as a board reset. So I appreciate everything that was done this morning.
Absolutely. And I'll just add one more thing for the people of Story County. So sitting here today, Marty Chitty's the vice chair of our region and moving to chair in the next year. Is that right?
July 1.
And Jody, in addition to being our CEO, Jody and I both sit on the statewide Mental Health and Disability Services Commission, which is really working hard to very nicely encourage DHS and the MCOs that we need to do better than we're doing right now. So Story County has a pretty strong voice kind of at multiple levels of what's happening here, and I think we need to use those voices. Thank you guys so much for the work you're doing and for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Joseph.
Mark Carlos. All right, no minutes this week, no personnel actions this week, claims for the 18th.
As presented.
Second.
Motion and a second. Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda board.
I'd like to pull the item handbook for boards and commission members for a minor edit.
Move approval with item 4 pulled for further discussion.
Correct.
So noted, I move that we...
The second.
Okay, that was
yep.
My second.
Motion and a second with 4 pulled. Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Let's deal with the handbook.
Okay. Since we gave our original comments and edits to staff to create the final copy, it has come up in relation to appointment for boards and commissions that some of our commissions and boards at least allow us to appoint a resident who is not a citizen of the United States. And we have some language on page 5 that I think then should be adjusted to reflect that we can take a resident who is not does not hold citizenship. So in the first, under eligibility requirements and qualifications, at the end of the first sentence, it says, and qualified electors of Story County. But qualified electors would be a citizen, correct, Ethan? I see our legal counsel back there. So I'd like to just take out that phrase, end it at are required to be residents, period, and to delete and qualified electors of Story County. Then you move down under application.
Well, would there be any subsets in regards to unqualified electors?
Can you think of any? I'm just asking here.
I know.
I'm just, okay. I would just say if it was denoted here that they were qualified, what can you think of off the top of your head would be
it's
unqualified?
It's the elected. It's the elector itself. You can't vote unless you're a U.S. citizen.
Okay.
So, yeah, so that, okay. Then that done under application and vacancies, the first bullet point, it says any citizen, and I'd like to just change that to any resident. And it does go on to note down there sometimes there are different rules if you go down to the text. But so those are just so that we make it clear that we can have someone who holds a green card, who is a citizen of another nation, okay, as long as they're residents.
All right.
Are you agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you need any more time to review this, or are you good? So I'm hearing that you want to strike "and qualified electors" from the top sentence.
Correct.
And you want to change "citizen" to "resident."
Correct.
We kind of blew past that when you started reading this. I was just moving paper around. Mm-hmm. You revisit the start of your point here.
Sure. During the recruitment time for boards and commissions, I was the one who was speaking to a medical professional related to the Board of Health.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then she pointed out, oh, but, you know, I'm not a U.S. citizen. She holds Canadian citizenship, but she has a business here. And, I mean, she's here to stay. So, therefore, Ethan checked, and that it is not required to be a citizen for at least that particular board. So that's, I just want to change the language so that it reflects there are, in fact, residents who can be appointed to some of our boards and commissions.
Right, but, and so just to be clear here, because I don't want to take us down a road that has some major political implications on our boards and commissions. You're only talking about legal residents, right? You're not looking to open this up to somebody who's not a legal resident.
No. Okay. So the language, if you would like to include here, required to be legally living
legal,
in the U.S.
Legal resident.
Yeah,
just legal resident. You're good with that?
I'm good with that, yeah.
All right. So under eligibility requirements and qualifications, unless otherwise specified, applications for all boards and commissions appointed by the Board of Supervisors are required to be legal residents of Story County. Any legal resident interested in serving on a board or commission, et cetera. You're good with
I'm
both
good
of
with
those.
That. Yeah, I'm good with that.
Yeah, Marty, you're good with both of those. That's fine. I just want to not hand off the problem into the future.
Right.
I don't want to leave us in a situation, and I am loath to go chase a political endpoint.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ethan, you got no concerns with us making those amendments?
That's fine.
Okay. Alyssa and Deb, good? Okay. And did you make a motion?
I make a motion that we make the changes as noted for legal residents and then any legal resident, and striking the rest of that first sentence and qualifying, et cetera.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right, second now.
Motion and a second. Further discussion?
None.
Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. All right. That takes care of consent agenda. Public hearing items. First consideration of Ordinance 277, amending Table 90-1 of conditional uses to add kennels for the raising, breeding, and boarding of dogs or other small animals.
Morning, Jerry.
Hey, if I've got a emotional support squirrel, would this apply to this?
We'd have to look at the definitions.
I could have. So anybody who hadn't been following it, there was a lady who got kicked off a plane because she wanted to take her emotional support squirrel with her on the plane. That's what I was referring to.
That's the scratch.
Yeah, the goal is to get the dog kennel ordinance language reinstated back into the county's code of ordinances. It was inadvertently removed by mistake by our department.
This is when we did the recodification of all of our ordinances, and this is just one of those areas that accidentally got left out as we approved everything.
Accidentally got left out. So the goal is to reinstate it. We did, however, review the adjacent county's ordinances, and for the most part, there's a lot of similarities with the adjacent ordinances. They have definitions which range from, you know, the keeping of dogs from 3 to 5 or more than 5. Processes are similar to Story County's. There's two of them had a conditional use permit review process involving staff and then ultimately a board making that decision. There were a few that permitted dog kennels in certain districts through zoning, through site plan requirements. And then surprisingly, the regulations are very, very similar. So I think there was a lot of talking going on when each of the entities approved their ordinances. The ordinance that we have and that's similar to other counties is there's a 50-foot setback for dog runs in a kennel for buildings from a common property line. And if the adjacent use is a residential use, residentially zoned, or if there's a dwelling there, then there's a 200-foot separation requirement. So in looking at the adjacent ordinances, we didn't think that we were really missing anything. So again, the goal is to reinstate what we have. And then to keep in mind, we have the ability, because it's a conditional use permit, to impose or require additional conditions based on the project, the location, what's being proposed, how it might impact the neighborhood and surrounding uses. So we have that that we can consider also. The last thing that we did is we met with Sue McCaskey, Director of Animal Control Department here at Story County, and it was somewhat of an education process for us and our staff. We learned a lot about the work that she recently worked on with others in the county in the amendments to Chapter 45, Animal Control and Welfare. There's a specific chapter, which I'm going to go through just briefly, that addresses private kennels. So at the end of our meeting, we felt pretty good that with the ordinance that we have, what we're trying to reinstate, the ordinance that is in her Chapter 45, specifically 45.11 that deals with private kennels, we're really addressing the care of animals, and we're really looking at the impact of the use and the surrounding area. So this is just Chapter 45.11. Again, it's in the Animal Control and Welfare Chapter, which her department is responsible for. The first paragraph talks about a temporary license that's required through her department before the applicant obtains a license from the state or the federal entity, depending on which rules they fall under. The first one talks about the structure shall be maintained in a manner that addresses adequate air and ventilation to get to adequate health and provide reasonable comfort to animals. Two, provides information about space needs, and Animal Control Department has the authority to require additional space based on what's, you know, what the application is, what the animals are, so they can request adjustments as needed. Three talks about the kennel shall be maintained so that the animal waste does not accumulate or cause a health hazard or offensive smells. Four talks about noise disturbances to be addressed. Five is minimum level of care, and that's a separate subsection that also addresses livestock. Six talks about a rabies vaccination that's required. And seven gives the Story County Animal Control Department the authority to do on-site inspections. Now, she said we always communicate up front, let them know that we're coming, but they have that authority to do inspections if they choose to do that, regardless of whether there's a state license or a federal license.
But let's just be completely clear. This is already passed. This is already in our ordinances. We just want to make sure that anything we put in or back in Chapter 90 agrees with this.
Right. So again, what we're proposing is to reinstate this language back in Chapter 90, the conditional use chapter. It would be Table 90-1, Table of Conditional Uses, and it states, kennels for the raising, breeding, and boarding of dogs or other small animals, provided all buildings, including exercise runways, be at least 50 feet from all property lines and at least 200 feet from any residential district or residential property line. And then you'll see it's got that asterisk. If the proposed location is in an A1 district, it has to have a low land evaluation site assessment. Otherwise, they cannot do that use there. So the goal is to preserve prime agricultural farm ground.
Sure. And is what we're talking about reinserting any different from what would have been there had it made the cut when we were recodified?
This is what it would look like. This is what it did look like. That paragraph that I read is off to the left-hand side.
Yep.
Background, that's purple, by the way. permitted in an A1 agricultural district or A2 agribusiness with a conditional use permit. And then again, it's got that caveat, and this just basically states that in an A1 district, you need to have a low land evaluation site assessment.
Right.
You cannot do that.
But what I'm asking you to verify for me is this is not a change from what it was. So we're not going to have anybody that in the past had complied that would now not be in compliance.
This is the exact same thing.
Okay. Questions or comments for Jerry? one of those things when you go through and you recodify all your ordinances, occasionally you find something that didn't make the cut. And
right, just a little bit of additional information. We did have conceptual review, had a few staff members there, nothing written. County Attorney's Office reviewed it September 21. The board set the hearing for today for Resolution 1935. We did do the publication in the Ames Daily Tribune, Tri-County Times, Nevada Journal. It went to the Planning and Zoning Commission twice. There was a comment on the September 5th about whether or not there were any concerns with regards to the previous language. We're not aware of any as staff. And then at the October 3rd meeting, there was some comments about whether or not the language that we're trying to get reinstated, if there were any conflicts, or if it was consistent with the work that was previously done by the Animal Control Department. And we think there's consistency and they work well together. We had two conceptual review cases reviewed, one on 120th Street northeast of McCallsburg for a dog kennel. The other is a dog daycare, Highway 210 east of Slater. So we've got two potential applications.
This is actually figured out that it didn't make the cut into
our new
ordinance.
And we've got somebody in the audience who's very interested in this, who's here today. So the Planning and Zoning Commission at the October 3 meeting did vote 5-0 unanimously to support Ordinance 277. Again, this is the first consideration. If you decide to do the second consideration, that would be October 23. You have to answer your questions.
Thank you. Considering what a big project codification was, I want to address that first, okay? I think the staff did a remarkable job and worked well. The vendor did well, you know, in working with staff. So it's just one of these little hiccups that happens when you deal with a lot of laws and you have to update them or see what's going on with them. So I thank you for that, first of all. And I thank you for recognizing the entire connection with other ordinances in chapters of our law. So thank you, Jerry, for really doing a thorough job.
Good. Other questions or comments? We're open the public hearing.
I have nothing to add.
Okay.
Just nothing more.
Then let's open the public hearing and ask if there's anyone who would like to address us on the, I'll call it the reinsertion of Table 90-1. Dealing with kennels and boarding and reading. I see no one moving to the microphone. I'll close the public hearing. Jerry, is there a reason, and Ethan, this is for you as well, is there a reason that we need to do a second and possibly third reading on this? I mean, so this is what our ordinance was. It's what it should have been if we had noticed when we were doing recodification. I don't see any reason for us to delay this.
Yeah, we have not heard from the general public with regard to any comments, really. And specifically, no concerns. State law says you have the authority to waive readings.
Yeah.
I would think that you would have that authority. But
you'd be comfortable if we decided to waive second and third reading and just go ahead and get this done and get it re-put. Okay. So, Ford, there's an option for you. Yeah, if you have anything further to add or if there's a motion.
I move that we adopt Ordinance 277 as presented and that we waive the second and third readings and considerations.
So that makes this action final today if, in fact, it passes. Further discussion?
None.
Olson?
Aye.
Chee?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Ordinance 277, which amends 90-1, reinserting it into our code of ordinances, passes. We waive second and third reading, so it does take effect now.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Gary. Two additional items, discussion and consideration of the draft request for proposal for Story County Justice Center re-roofing project, Joby and Leanne. So as you're approaching, so we tried this once, and then we had a little snafu, and so we rejected all the original bids that we got, worked closely with the county attorney's office to put together our next iteration of our request for proposals, and that's where we are now, Joby.
Correct. So this is the newest version of the RFP, where we addressed the known issues we had with the original.
And so, just so we're clear, We had a couple issues with the original, but the primary one that I believe forced us to reject all bids and really go back to the drawing board was we had two separate drafts.
Yeah, there was an early draft version of the specifications that got attached after we put an addenda to the package after the pre-bid walkthrough. So.
Outstanding. All right, Leanne, take us through it.
Quickly, the primary change is a reorganization to add in the results of the original pre-bid walkthrough and some of the findings. So Jovi did go through the project specifics and clarify, again, some of the issues that were identified with the initial RFP. The prior version, too, had the agenda that had the bid package and everything attached, and now that's all now included as an appendix.
Okay.
We did not have those when we did the first RFP, so those were addenda. So primarily reorganization, still following. There's some areas where the old RFP said either contractor or consultant. We tried to make it vendor and contractor consistent. Well, that's what you get when you use templates. I guess the calendar is also the page 5, the estimated timeline. Unfortunately, it does take it out into March of 2019 for the anticipated completion date. And Jovi and I did work through the calendar, the timeline, and the one note, if you did attend the pre-bid meeting already, you don't need to attend again. Just to clarify that, since some vendors did come from some distance.
Some traveled 2-3 hours to make it to the first one, so.
And we have a sign-in sheet, so Jody will be able to verify that.
Uh-huh. Good.
Are there any questions?
I don't have any questions. We're going to hear from Matt Randall here in just a minute. As soon as the board, if you have other questions about this or this process, it's unfortunate that we're going to have to wait for a completion date.
Yeah, we
lose the winter, but we're just going to have to make it work.
Yeah, we was hoping to get it in before the snow fell, but
too late. That was
not going to make it now. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Already happened.
The other thing I would add is we changed the submission deadline for bids. So originally we were talking about getting all our bids on a Friday, holding them through the weekend, and coming in and opening them on a Tuesday. There was a concern raised by one of the bidders of, wait a minute, I'm not comfortable handing in our bids and then them just sitting around for a few days. And so we changed the bid deadline to Tuesday morning at 9:30, and then we'll open them at 10 o'clock. So everybody will be here with them. Anything else that we need to note?
No, just the concern with that, there's the auditor's office is really busy this time of year.
Yep.
And so we tried to relieve some of the stress from them.
Yep.
And that was...
Because everything comes through the auditor's office to us, and then the two of you will be sitting there opening those bids for us. Good. Questions or comments?
No, I appreciate that the auditor's office also is working with us because we need to work with the people who want to bid. So
okay.
I appreciate that.
Okay, thanks, Matt. It's Matt Randall. He's asked to address us on this topic.
Good to see you again, Matt.
Thanks, sir.
I have just a couple of specific issues here I wanted to address, and then just a couple of general questions. And probably there's three specific items, and I assume all of you have the bidding, you have hard copy of the bidding documents or access to it there, so I didn't include everything in there. Number one, which is, so section 7 is when projects like this are bid, specifications are written, and Section 7 always deals with the waterproofing building envelope. So that's where this came from. My first point there is Section 1.10. It deals specifically with the warranty. And this is an important thing to understand. This specification, I believe, was probably written for a new construction-type installation, and what's happening here is we're actually specifying just putting on a new sheet membrane over the roof. So the warranty right now says it's supposed to include warranty for everything down the deck. So from the roof, insulation, everything. And all we would ask is that at the end of that sentence of 1.10, just add installed as part of this RFP. So any of the new items that are installed will be included as a warranty. And that, so that would provide the ability. Because if a membrane was installed by a manufacturer that is not currently on the roof, they cannot nor would they warranty the system, the insulation that was put down 20 years ago.
So we're not expecting them to either.
Yeah, and I think I was.
So we just want the warranty on all new materials.
We agree. Yeah. We agree with what it should be. And Matt, you're just asking for a clarification statement on that. Which is where we are.
Yep.
That's it. Even any issue with inserting language like that? I mean, in my mind, it's just clarifying that we're only talking about the stuff that the whatever roofer is putting up there under warranty, nothing else.
Yep. Okay. The second one, part 2.1, so you have two products in there. So I'm not going to give you a sales pitch, but there's families of products, PVCs, TPOs, EPDMs. The products that are both here are high-quality PVC products, but inside the PVC world, there's different types of products, okay? And that's what you have here. They're both very good products. The FiberTite product, I spoke to the sales rep this morning, and the best way to explain it is when you're looking at like buying a TV, there's thin TVs and there's thick TVs, and they cost more or less, but it's based on what's inside of them. That's kind of how it works with roofing. So you can't just totally gauge it based on the thickness of the membrane. The product that's in there right now is called a 50 mil, which is a 51/1000 for the FiberTite. And in talking to the FiberTite folks, from a testing and standard standpoint, the appropriate matching product, which would match the Sarnafil product that's in there, would be the 45 mil product. So it's 5/1000ths of an inch thinner and has a slightly different fabric on the inside, and that's the only issue. So,
you know, I never once said that the two materials are identically comparable. That's why there's a mil difference. And I have an email that I can provide from a FiberTite representative, Mike Moeller, I believe his name is, to be specific. And he's the one that recommended the 50 XT up next to the 80 mil Sarnafil 327. Because I come up with my specs based off of roof traffic, wind lift, and we're already giving up mil thickness by.
Yeah, we're going potentially 72 mils down to 50 mils, and now we're talking about possibly.
Then I had a miscommunication with him on that. Because when I talked to him this morning, he told me. So if you have that, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, okay.
And that's where I come up with my numbers.
So that's resolved.
Joby, you're comfortable with the 50.
50, but not down to 45 mil SM.
Okay.
Yep, that's fine. That's fine.
All right.
And then finally, so there's one additional difference in this. There's a second alternate now in the project. So before there was, I think.
No, there's always been two alternates.
For the
police spec. Yep.
I guess my only is making sure we just mark what the products are. Traditionally, it's going to match this, but it's a separate product. So those are the only issues I have there. So.
Okay, explain that one to me.
There's different ways to attach the roof system to the deck. So there's a unique thing in here where the curb flashing is going to remain on the roof system, which is those areas that go up underneath the air conditioning unit.
Right.
And right now it says just going to leave those in place because it costs quite a bit of money to lift them up, replace those and put them back down, which is fine. And they're both PVC, so they can weld to each other, so that's not an issue. It has more to do with how they're attached. So the fleece back system, the advantage of the fleece back, and Joby can talk about this, they both provide good hail resistance, but in different ways.
The fleece back option was put in there basically because we had an alternative to just do a membrane upgrade. That was alternative two, I think, or whatever. It's on his sheet. And that's just leaving the existing membrane up there, cutting it into a 10 by 10 grid. So from my understanding, you have to have the fleece back to lay directly over top of the existing membrane. And that's the only reason the fleece back is in there. And then the securing method on that is mechanically fastened, which is what my understanding was is what inseam securement stood for. It's basically a big steel plates, big washer, you screw the one edge and then you overlap, adhere the membrane there, then go to the next, just repeat pattern across the roof.
It's okay. The hard part is there are three in the base bid. The way I read the base bid is tear off the existing roof, glue down a new roof.
Put down exactly the
exactly what's
match
there.
What's there, because that's the insurance drives that. We don't have really any choice on that.
Right. The second one is leave it in place, put a board down, put plates down, and then it's called induction welding, that's a really good system, but it's different than the alternate two, which is mechanically attached, where all you do is screw down the seams. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get the same sheet. They're going to be put down in different ways with different substrates, which affects the cost and the performance. And the specification is okay. There's nothing in there that dictates that specifically says how the induction welding occurs. It's all stuff that manufacturers have out there, so it's not that it's unknowable. It's just ensuring, from my perspective or any other bidder, you just want to make sure we've all got the same information.
There's this page right here. The page isn't numbered, but it's I can tell you what it's after the specifications page goes into the attachments.
Okay.
And it's let me find it here. It's after the I got to clear out this place. I apologize. I just had it.
Is it an attachment A or attachment B?
Sorry, Laura.
No, thermoplastic membrane reserves general. Would that be a attachment?
It would be right after. It would be attachment A,
where
it shows you the pattern for the thermally the grid pattern to use to attach those plates,
okay.
And then. Also in there, because he had mentioned the HVAC equipment, there's the approved method on how to deal with adding the flashing, and then Fibertite has a similar.
Well, I think, tell me if I'm wrong, but right now it's leaving the flashing in place and then welding a new sheet in there.
I think on a parapet wall on the court side, there's an issue where the fish scales meet the roof, and there's like in half an inch worth of roof membrane exposed. Mm-hmm. So there is where we're allowing for the first, I think it's like 4 feet, you can weld, if your product can be welded to the existing membrane, you can weld there and then use a liquid sealant over top of it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to have to pull that fish scale off and bring your flashing up the wall, your membrane up the wall.
So once again, what it says under the sheet of paper that Matt gave us, Part B, clarify that the system should be mechanically attached. Okay? And what you just said, Joby, is that a mechanical attachment or a different type?
Yes, it's a mechanical attachment in one area, and it's a welded attachment in another.
Yeah.
I think what he's referring to in his paper he brought was just in general on the one to clarify where it just says inseam securement, which I don't have a problem with adding mechanically fastened.
Yeah.
Just to
clarify.
Just
all.
To clarify. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, so we've got two clarifying statements is what I'm hearing. And Joe, you're good with both of those.
Yeah.
Don't change what we're trying to do. We're just underscoring what it is.
That's it.
Easy enough, Ethan, for us to approve this RFP with the notation that we're going to add two clarifying statements as we discuss today.
Yeah, I'm going to minimize their confusion.
That's all.
Okay. Anything else, Matt?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Board, other questions, comments, or a motion to approve this RFP with the addition of the two clarifying statements that we discussed today?
Okay, move consideration of the draft question RFP for our Story County Justice Center re-roofing project and adding the two clarifying statements as was previously discussed.
Second.
Motion and a second. Joby, anything else we need to be thinking about here?
I think we've covered everything right now.
All right. Super. Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. So we approve the RFP, adding the two clarifying statements that we talked about. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
All right. Was surprised to see this next item come on our agenda after we spent so much time on it several weeks ago, and I think gave really, really clear direction to staff that was, in fact, followed by staff. This is discussion and consideration of manufacturing growth article in Our Story, fall of 2018. Loris, as I understand it, you requested this on our agenda.
Correct.
We spent a lot of time on this, Loris. I know it was a 2-1 vote. Is there some kind of new information that you want to bring forward today, or is this just that you're unhappy that it didn't go your way 3 weeks ago?
There's new information, but also I don't believe we had a vote. And so I inquired with the county attorney, and so the first item, and not all of you have this, is a screen printout. It's the summary I circled from our county attorney, Jessica Reynolds. But, Ethan, thank you for doing the legal work on this. And Ethan was very thorough in taking a look at this from the legal department standpoint. And you will note on here that, first of all, the attorney, Reynolds agrees with Easton's assessment that there is nothing legally unlawful, or she may be using, or they're using the term inappropriate differently than I am, but it's okay. There's nothing illegal about doing this. The second thing, though, is she says the board will need to vote on the particular article if there is some disagreement among board members. That's part of why it's
But we did today. That in offering direction to our staff to go ahead and write this article, and that's exactly what they did.
I did not hear a motion during that. I heard, in fact, there was no motion on the agenda. I believe it was listed.
Direction. Sure. We gave direction to staff to do their job.
I gave direction to staff with some different information or some information.
Well, but you can't give direction to staff. We can give direction to staff.
But we never took a vote. I believe we went through this pretty lengthy last June and July about what's consensus and how it can be held or not held, too. So, yes, yeah, so it's back on. Okay.
Okay, so let's take a vote.
I presented additional information here.
I'm kind of leaning there because I think this is not going in the direction when we first brought this in discussion and then we brought it into being. It's kind of bent itself into the fact that this is too consuming more time and effort than I would like it to go. But first, could you please explain what you dropped here just before the start of the meeting?
I can, and I have a question for Alyssa first. Alyssa, do you have copies of the communications plan? That was the other item, and I believe you talked about. It's okay. I have two with me. All right, so that will suffice for you two. I'm sorry, I don't. I'm sorry, I don't have communication plan copies for others. We can get that later if you would like it.
Thank you.
I'm not sure. So the next item is that my major concern is appropriate use of taxpayer money, and appropriate used in a philosophical term, since we've already cleared that legally there's nothing about this. So it's a philosophical term about what is the purpose of this newsletter. So I've turned to our communications plan. And you don't have time to read it all, so I'm going to make note of some items here. This plan is written very clearly and consistently to indicate about what communications, our communication goal and plan is, and it is to put out county information to the public. And, in fact, if you go to page 5,
you're going to notice that there's no mention of private nonprofits or businesses anywhere in this plan, other than on page 5, is that it clearly says that we would produce government information for businesses, nonprofits, et cetera. So that would be page 5. And so in taking on third-party, promoting third-party information and including it in any one of our particular medium, I believe that we're going against our own communications policy that we went ahead and updated in January of 2018. In addition, if you go to the first sentence of this, so turn to historical overview. First sentence says, a communication plan is a blah, 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 just talks about living document, of the organization. I mean, I think that's pretty clear. Of the organization. We are the organization. We are the ones who are communicating outward about us, not to go with third parties. So, in addition, page 6 refers, and all through this, when you take a look, there's continued use of our, us, we, and county with a capital C. And county with a capital C is indicative in here about county as a story county, not county as in lowercase. So it's a very deliberate inclusion in our communications plan. So I am concerned that we're violating or we're going contrary with the directions that and guidance that came from this board 3 weeks ago. I'm concerned that it even violates the plan that we went ahead and passed.
Yeah, it clearly doesn't, Loris. And here's the deal. You refuse to acknowledge that the AEDC, when it comes to economic development in Story County, is a paid position by the county. They are our representative, just like if we had created, instead of going outside the contract, we had created a department and hired an employee. Then what I'm hearing you say is you wouldn't have any problem with this. You were very willing to go on these tours. You were very willing to stand and have a picture with the governor when we presented this plaque on these three items. This is a big, big deal for Story County, and it doesn't happen without Story County's involvement, without Story County contracting with the AEDC to make these things done happen. And the other thing is about our news. Let me finish. The other thing about our newsletter is we have a tradition in our newsletter. So you're the one who negotiated the contract for this newsletter. And in the time we've been doing this newsletter, we've talked about workforce in Story County. We've talked about cemeteries in Story County, which are not Story County specific. That's township specific. We've talked about stink bugs in Story County. We've talked about the Housing Trust Fund, which is not Story County. We've talked about home-based Iowa, which is much bigger than Story County. We've talked about crisis stabilization, which is the region and not Story County. We've talked about watersheds, which is not run by Story County. We've talked about the 2020 census, national. We've talked about RAGRI, which has nothing to do with Story County. It's information for our citizens. This isn't even close. This is a complete waste of time on something that has already been decided because you didn't get your way.
Excuse me. I believe it may be the opposite. I'm going to address, first of all, my 20 years in communications. You know, I think that we all rely upon each other for areas of expertise that we bring in. And I feel that this is being minimized about the area of expertise, okay, including what industry practices are. The other thing is everything you've named there, I believe, has a separate contractual relationship to what this particular article, we're talking about this article right now, has. Yes, correct. Marty's holding it up about manufacturing. Our contract with the AEDC is to provide economic development services to communities under 2,000. We have a contract as one of a partners when it comes to job growth, but nowhere in that article does it point out what our contractual relationship is. This article is about what the state awarded to three private entities. So the reason I bring up my 20 years of experience is I don't feel that I was given proper respect. I'm going to say respect for what I know about the industry. So you ask asked about the next documents you've got there, Marty. And they are exactly two statements, one from the City of Ames Public Information Officer, the other one from a communications employee with Polk County, both clearly stating that they don't get into the publicizing and promotion of third-party entities. I talked to them specifically about this article, too, and saying, is this something that you would promote in any of your venues, and you have the information there. The City of Ames, that puts out multiple types of communication, printed communication. Susan Biazza made it very clear what the city's policies are. For the Polk County, they will tweet out something like this or use social media, okay?
And do either one of them do a countywide newsletter?
Well, the city does a monthly newsletter that comes in your utility bill. And Polk County does nothing but their annual report. Everything else is done via social media and press releases. So I am back to here that it really concerns me that we are using taxpayer money for entities that can promote themselves that are not in a collaboration, because I believe that you will notice in both of those documents that they talk about when you're in a true collaboration, and the collaboration is directly related to an event. I think that we didn't ask for those plaques. We did not, I feel, do anything significant related, and we had this discussion last night.
Stop. If you had not voted to put a statement of support to the Burke Project, he wasn't going anywhere. That's the biggest component of this. That is, you're saying,
I mean, if I had not voted personally?
No. You could have voted no. It would have been a 2-to-1 vote.
Right.
If this board had said no, that was one of the markers when you had the pushback in regards to how you felt about 10 years of tax abatements. Part of that story was that was something we were in a bidding process with Atlanta, Georgia, or Nevada, Iowa. Now, I would shudder to think what a board would look like that would say no to stopping a project of that magnitude with the throw-offs that would be reaching out into decades. And unfortunately, we don't have that board. That board here voted, and you voted with us to do that. But still, once again, this is something we had a direct impact on as far as seeing success ahead.
Well, I do resent that we're back here because I didn't get my way. This is about professional standards, and I'm not talking about staff here. I am talking about our board giving direction to staff. 3 weeks ago, according to Rick, we voted on it, that actually conflicts what our own written communication policy says. The only thing that's not in here, Rick, when you read it, is an actual statement that says, thou shall not put in third-party information where there's not a clear direct
separation. I don't believe that this is third-party information. This is about Story County. This is about $200 million of investment in Story County. This is about 400 jobs in Story County, and Story County's role in helping make that
this
become a reality.
This article talks about nothing about our role.
It's no different than a map of RAGBRAI coming through Story County.
We funded $6,000 for RAGBRAI.
No different. Can somebody tell me how long this contract is going to run for?
Two more issues. We're going to talk about that more here in a couple weeks.
This and one more?
This and two more.
Loris, when we took this out of the ground, I think that you kind of drove the narrative. You would like to see the outreach in regards to telling our story. I have done nothing but ask to, in a reduced role, just to read it, approve it, and make any changes that I thought was going to improve it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any qualms about the fact I still am amused from 3 weeks ago that somebody would find that what has been put out by the AEDC earlier this summer would accrue a political benefit to either Rick or myself. That's great. I can't find a way to spin that story to help my own cause, but here we are. And thanks if it does, I guess.
Yeah, the only thing that happened 3 weeks ago is a very nice picture of the three of us receiving that plaque from Governor Reynolds that should be part of this. and a little more discussion about what Story County's role in all of this is not included because of that conversation 3 weeks ago. It should be included, but as we talked it through 3 weeks ago, we decided we were going to err on the side of caution in not putting those things in there for exactly that reason.
Did
it's
we
silly.
Talk about that? I don't remember that discussion.
That. I sat here and I promised my picture and my name will not be associated with anything in this thing.
Not any of the
and
other content.
That's exactly where we were. It's time. Okay, so it's time to deal with this. Do I have a motion?
I move that we direct staff to remove this article and substitute it with county-related content of staff's choosing.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second? Okay, it dies for lack of
I
second.
Would make a motion to include that draft as presented. And I'd also like to make a motion that I'd see this contract.
Let's do one motion at a time. Let's do one motion at a time.
All right. This, I see, it's worthy of our story. And then I would make that motion included.
So you're moving that this be included in this newsletter as drafted by staff.
I see nothing about this that I would not want to see there.
Okay. Yes. I second. Further discussion. Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
No.
Sanders, aye. It passes. It's handled. Now,
I would like to make a motion.
You can't. You're out of order. It's not on the agenda. It will be on the future agenda.
I would like to have that brought back because I think you have the opportunity for a new board. And just this statement. I think that we are at an end point as far as this is concerned. Maybe a new board would see otherwise, but I don't see, I have no qualms about approving this as being something we'd like to communicate with the county.
I think it does need to come back. I also let you know that I'll be putting on the agenda in the future changes for our communication plan, which I believe then, since you've made that direction. I do have a final statement. I was very, very uncomfortable 3 weeks ago when the statements were made that you just wanted good news or happy news. I was very...
No, the statement was you did not want any good news.
That is an accusation. That is certainly not true. That list that was turned in had plenty of positive information about what was happening in Story County. And so I want to address that in choosing good things, happy things that were happening among Story County staff and Story County government, when you chose this article over them, I feel that the message was sent to the staff that what you do doesn't matter as much as what goes on because the businesses got, private business got some funding. And so that is what I want to state here, is I felt sad afterwards about that because I felt there were several on there that could show how innovative we are, what we do, the quality of what we do. And we set best practices. In fact, we make them for the rest of the state sometimes. And I'd like to see us do best practices as exhibited by the peers who deal with communication in government.
Yeah, and I just so appreciate your concern for staff and treating staff right. I'm so excited if you're finally going to buy into that concept of treating staff right.
I think
right.
You're going too far,
and,
Mr. Chairman.
We'll move on to agency reports, which there aren't any. Departmental reports, there aren't any. Other reports, there aren't any. So we'll get to public forum number 2 and ask if there's anybody in the public that would like to address any topic you'd like to. Come right on up to the microphone. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to liaison assignments. Loris.
Okay, well, I am headed to Surha tonight to substitute for Vanessa Baker-Latimer. I'll be doing Aging Resources meeting on Thursday morning. In addition, working on several projects, trying to get more information on housing, redirected there. And last week, I think that my time was well spent at 2 meetings. One of them was Future Ready Iowa. I was not able to make the morning session because I was here. The afternoon session was very informative. There was a panel of local business managers who talked about various different jobs and hiring procedures. And then there was an overall group discussion that focused upon what do we need to provide wide, and how can different industries, et cetera, support, and different government units support moving our workforce. The other one I attended was the Children's Wellbeing Collective, Cooperative, and it's exciting to see how many different counties were represented in the room. That is from a grant that YSS got, and the discussion was how do we go ahead and create a system for 0 to 8 that maybe this entire state could adopt. So that was my week, the highlights of my week, and where I'm headed this week. Thank you.
Super. Marty.
Forums, forums, forums. We do. We're in that political season, and that is kind of consumes a lot of our time. We find that coming to an end for the supervisor candidates here this weekend. Have a Grant 5 meeting today. I was pleased to see that became part of a forum discussion last night. It will have a large impact in the Eastview annexation of Ames and the corridor between Ames and Nevada, and part of the discussion will take place later today. It's Boss's Day, and I'd like to thank everybody that fit to provide munchies for the Board of Supervisors, and thank you. And also, it's an election season. Please go out and vote.
Super.
Let's have a good Tuesday.
Outstanding. Thanks. So we've got a meeting with the town administrators and mayors later today, continuing our several-year practice of really reaching out and trying to break down the different silos that can exist from time to time here in Story County. So excited to have those conversations. Yesterday we were with our school board members and our school superintendents. Tonight there is a presentation at the Ames Public Library on our new crisis stabilization unit. Joby has worked so hard to get us to the end of that renovation. That's a county-owned building. It'll be services provided by Mary Greeley and funded by the region. It's another example of that great partnership. I'm proud that it was my brainchild. I sure appreciate Deb Shildroth's work in bringing that to fruition, and everybody partnering. I think it's going to be a great thing for Story County. Tomorrow I'll be down in Des Moines working with the statewide county supervisors as we work on building continuing education for supervisors. One of the things that that we get to see way too often is we get to see supervisors who come in with a without the skill set necessary to be able to do the job. We really want to work hard to make sure on a statewide basis that we're helping at a state level get that done. We'll have Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority meeting tomorrow, and that I'm so excited about everything going on in Squaw Creek Watershed. That's a great group, multiple counties, multiple cities, multiple soil and water conservation districts coming together. We've more than doubled the cover crops in Squaw Creek Watershed year over year. We need to continue that work. I'm proud to be part of that group. We'll have an Emergency Management Commission meeting tomorrow night. Keith and Melissa continue to do a great job for everyone in Story County, and always enjoy those meetings. Thursday, I'll be back down in Des Moines for the statewide Mental Health and Disability Services Commission meeting as we continue to work on ways to improve whatever system we're going to be under. I talk all the time. We've never had a mental health system that works here in Story County. You go all the way back, Marty, to your old neighbor, the county home site. Yes. You go through equalization, where I talk about Story County actually lost $1.2 million 1 year because we didn't spend down the final $10,000 in an ending fund balance. We got a lot of work to do. I'm proud to be part of that group. Then Thursday night we'll have a Prairie Rivers of Iowa meeting, again, continuing to try to work on so many important issues when it comes to water quality and soil health. Busy time, as always, for us as supervisors, but things are really, really good in Story County, and I'm looking forward to coming to work every single day. Anything else for us? If not, I'd take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We adjourn.